I suppose those who were homeschooled failed to grasp the concept of a pandemic and the need for public health measures. If they refuse, they are putting not only their health at risk, but their friends' families, and risk and the college staff at risk. There are many things we don't like in life, but we do them for the greater good. We have a duty to protect the vulnerable, bloody hell! I said from the get-go that instead of treating anti-masker terrorists with kid gloves, they needed to be handled properly, removed from the store and told to grow their own fucking food if they don't like it, and serious consequences for ones who yell in people's faces threaten. Hello everybody and welcome back to Bedwetters. Thanks ever so much for popping along and listening yet again to probably one of the only podcasts that tries to see all the complete stupidity that's happening around us at the moment with a slightly cynical eye, taking the piss out of the bedwetting ninnies who throw tantrums at people who don't wear masks, only argue by going you're killing someone and actually not ever referring to proven statistics or facts. How about that? The first two bedwetting segments there I actually took from the replies of a Twitter thread from a video posted by @VoteForSimeon, who is a worried student going to Nuigleway College in Ireland. I think I've said that right. Sorry if I haven't. They've been informed that they must sign a pledge called the Community Promise or be thrown out of university. This pledge means signing away your rights, disclosing personal health data, getting a COVID-19 test if instructed, and changing your behaviour. Listen to this.
So on Friday last week, NUIG students were informed of a new pledge they will need to sign if they want to return to college next month. Now this pledge, called the Community Promise, is very problematic. It completely undermines students' rights and freedoms. It compels us to share personal health data on an ongoing basis with the university. And in addition, it binds us under an obligation to change our behaviour in whatever way the university demands. Now, there are four main problems with the Community Promise. In the first place, it's a form of compelled speech. The university is telling us we must sign it or we will be thrown out of university. That is an infringement on our rights to freedom of speech. In the second place, the promise is requiring us to commit to following guidelines, no matter how they may change into the future. Now, this is a totally open-ended commitment, and it flies in the face of individual autonomy. It forces students to surrender the right to think for themselves. In the third place, the promise compels us to share personal health data on an ongoing basis with the university. It means that if you get a cough, if you get a cold, if you feel tired in a few weeks' time, you're going to have to share that information with the university. And if you're asked, get a COVID test and self-isolate. If you don't do that, you might be subjected to a disciplinary process. Finally, the Community Promise involves a pledge to change your behaviour whenever you're challenged by the university. That's irrespective of any view you might have to the wrongness or the rightness of your behaviour. You're committing to changing it, whatever the university say. So this is extremely serious. Today I'm contacting and writing to the president of NUI Galway, Professor Ciarán O'Hogarty. I'm going to raise my concerns with him and register my objections. I'll be in touch with any updates.
So yet again, universities have proven that not only are they out of date when it comes to just education, I mean, who really stands head and shoulders above everyone else now when it comes to the jobs market, when everybody has got a university degree in business studies or something like that? Thanks very much, Tony. Actually, come to think of it, now that we're going to have a completely crashed economy, you're probably going to have roughly, I'd say, 3,000 or 4,000 people with university degrees trying to get one cleaning job. But universities have also yet again proven themselves incapable of allowing students to have free speech, to have thoughts of their own, as long as they're in line with the ridiculous woke claptrap that they spew out on a daily basis. Now, I don't know what the name of it is, but we get corporate wokeism sometimes, don't we? And they're doing that at the moment with all their, we need to look after each other during the COVID pandemic crisis. Oh God, we've got to do that. And universities are just weighing in there as well. They absolutely love it. They love going, oh, we've got to look after each one of our students. Hold on, are you thinking something different? Whoa, fucking hell. We're going to have to kill you. Is the university campus basically the NKVD? I mean, do you go to the Komsomol at A-levels and then end up fully fledged member of the NKVD once you join universities? I mean, the people in these unions are completely mental. And that's where I read some of the replies. One of them was, I suppose those who are homeschooled fail to grasp the concept of a pandemic and the need for public health measures. And that was from a guy called Gerard. You know what? I bet Gerard is exactly like the Gerard in Peep Show with his little tube going up his nose trying to shag Dobby. How dare you, Gerard?
I know what you're doing, Gerard.
What's that, Mark? Being quite ill.
I've got my beady eye on you.
We'll see about that. I'm playing the long game.
Oh, it looks like Gerard's beating everyone else to talking about long COVID, which, if you ask me, is going to be the next battleground of the stupid. Oh, God. There were one or two other dissenting replies, but you know what? Bearing in mind this is Twitter landscape world, the amount of people saying, I'm sorry, the pandemic's over, there probably wasn't one in the first place. One of them says, COVID is all a scam, there is no virus, take your head out of your bottom, get off your backsides and look at the facts, everything is there for you to see. Scamdemic. Someone else at Sue Sensor said, what on earth is going on? More and more infringements of civil liberties under the guise of health. Keep going and asking the crucial question, why? Someone else said, that is bullshit, I will not even wear a mask, I will not comply. Now, I have definitely seen in the comment sections on social medias, on like BBC posts, Telegraph posts, Twitter, loads of different places, I'm now starting to see, and this is really, really positive, the general public going against what's going on. I mean, we've seen Bozza do a U-turn when it comes to masks in schools. For days and days and days, he said repeatedly, we don't need masks in schools. But then what happened? Firstly, old Turgid Sturgid raised her ugly head. I mean, the one good thing about masks is that I don't see her face anymore. She said, oh, we're going to put masks in every school ever. We may take your faces. And we'll also take your freedom. And then, as usual, newspapers and media outlets weigh in with the usual thing of pressure is increasing on, increasing calls for, stuff like that. Where actually the pressure and the increasing calls are just people writing it in newspapers. That's all it is. But true to everything that he's done so far, Boris got scared of the media and therefore changed his mask-wearing diktat in schools. So you have to wear them in communal areas in places that are of high risk. Now, we'll get on to high risk in a minute, because there isn't anywhere in the UK that's high risk, because hardly anyone is dying of coronavirus anymore in this country, and we're pretty much well on the way to doing a Sweden and getting herd immunity, which is absolutely brilliant. We should be opening up right now. But one thing that Boris has taught me over the last few days is, number one, whatever you do, don't change policy because of health or any proper science or anything like that, because we all know that science never agrees with other science anyway. Just do it because of what newspapers and Nicola Sturgeon are calling for. And secondly, I had no idea that coronavirus was only dangerous in corridors. It's actually a great relief to know that coronavirus is only dangerous in corridors and not actually in school classrooms or the main hall or out on the playing field or anywhere else. Anyway, after this very quick break, I'm going to be reading you a few things from the Telegraph about the slight awakening of politicians to the ridiculousness of lockdown and this pandemic.
Hey, thank you for listening this far. Ooh, I fashioned a mask out of a bra, and now I can go shopping without people looking at me like I'm gonna kill their grandma. Oh my God, what is going on out there? People go bloody mental.
Guys, we'd love to hear from you over at the Bedwetters Podcast. Please email us at bedwetterspodcast@gmail.com. I want to read out some of your stories, how you felt through this lockdown, anything that you feel has affected you adversely or actually in a good way, because there are good things that can come out of this, even though I have really no idea what they can be. So please let us know. I'd love to add some of your stories to the podcast itself. But for now, let's get on with the show. This is a piece from Cheryl Jacobs in The Telegraph. I'm not going to read all of it. A lot of these, again, are behind paywalls. Listen to this. Did you hear it? Beyond the second wave sirens and the schools debate, the sound of the penny dropping on the global stage. In recent days, world leaders have hinted at an extraordinary admission. Lockdowns are a disaster, and we can't afford to repeat the mistake. Still, when the spiritless reverend of the global order, Angela Merkel, or as I call her, Angela, delivered this confession a few days ago, she was so officially ambiguous that the world paid no attention. Politically, we want to avoid closing borders again at any cost, but that assumes that we act in coordination, she droned at a summit in the Mediterranean, and with that, an earthquake, saving lives at any cost, has been exercised from the lexicon of liberal internationalism. Instead, the aim is to save the economy. This means acting in coordination to kill off second lockdowns. Guys, do you think maybe the penny's dropped with a lot of people that I remember a lot of bedwetters going on saying, your jobs aren't as important as people's lives, because those people had forgotten that the economy is lives. The economy pays for everything. Big business and business pays for everything. If there's no business, there's no healthcare. And if there's no healthcare, your life isn't saved, is it? You just wither away and die. Ugh, God, I'm off already. Let me carry on. Emmanuel Macron was the first leader to drop this little bombshell. Last week, he said that France can't cope with the collateral damage of a second lockdown, explaining that zero risk never exists in any society. Italy joined in 3 days later, with the health minister hinting that the country would not return to national hibernation. I mean, it's not like their economy isn't f***ed enough already without punitive charges from the European Union. Meanwhile, after lauding China's draconian lockdown, the World Health Organization is imploring countries to avoid battening down the hatches again. They've just mentioned China there, and I was just going to say something. Some people have said to me about the masks thing. They said, look, people in China have worn masks for ages, therefore it works. So how, therefore, did this virus spread from Wuhan if everyone was wearing masks in the first place? It's because it transmits in other ways, isn't it? And because masks are absolutely fucking useless. Cheryl goes on to say, about time. Lockdowns are officially indefensible. Sweden has won the international experiment, as its firms outperform even the German Großunternehmen. I can't say it. While COVID deaths plummet in line with the rest of Europe, scientists caution that it may take years to develop a vaccine. Oh, really? Is that news now? Because obviously we've developed loads for other coronaviruses, haven't we? Not. Economists warn that even the richest economies in the world cannot afford national lockdown, costing up to 3% of GDP per month. Perhaps even doom-mongering politicians have twigged that civilization threatens to evaporate into a mushroom cloud of psychoneurotic delirium. So guys, we are seeing a slight sea change, hopefully, in what people think about lockdowns, what people think about actually is happening with coronavirus. I think people are starting to realise now that, number one, lockdowns don't work. Microscopic viruses that float around in the air don't care about whether you're going to work or not. They're going to spread anyway. Also, if you overlay death rates and infection rates over the top of, say, England, France, Germany, America and Sweden, you wouldn't be able to choose the difference. I mean, let's face it, Sweden did not fully lock down. Some people are trying to argue the fact that they did now. Just before we go, a couple of interesting things have come through in the news at the moment. Transport Secretary Grant Chaps has said that 4,200 Britons have been referred to the police for breaking the mandatory 14-day quarantine rule. And you know what? I don't blame every one of those people that have done it. We've got quarantine rules coming in for Switzerland, but they don't start till Saturday. So what, is anyone coming in from Switzerland at the moment up until Saturday completely fine? Is it the same as the somehow deathly effect of coronavirus that only seems to happen in school corridors but not actually in school classrooms? I mean, come on, guys. Can't you just get your heads together? Pull your heads out of your goddamn asses and just realise that as a country, we don't need for you to be almost virtue signalling that you're doing something just by the fact that you're doing it. What we'd like to see is for you to say, these are the amount of people that are dying now. The fact that we're entering a case-demic is purely because we're using these unreliable PCR tests and we're increasing testing. And we want you to all go back to work. But you know what? What's the point in going back to work if there's nothing to enjoy in life? Going to a restaurant is not enjoyable. Going to the high street and watching all the sheep going around with their face masks on is not enjoyable. If you want the economy to open up, you need to make our lives enjoyable again. That's just part of the equation of saving the economy, saving our lives, and you know what? Saving the NHS. I've got a feeling, you know, that by Christmas, if this carries on like we are at the moment, we're going to see a vote of no confidence in Boris Johnson, and we're going to see a leadership election, perhaps in the Conservative Party by Christmas, or at the latest, next summer. Just want to finish off by saying that LBC were doing a phone-in this morning on Nick Ferrari's show about cases and the rise in cases and the fact that this could signal the fact that we've got a second wave coming. And I said to the researcher over the phone, I quoted to her Office of National Statistics stuff. I quoted her NHS bed occupancy data, all of which is easily found on the public domain online. And she replied to me that she couldn't verify it. So I said, look, send me your address and whatever. I will send you the links now, or I'll send you the links to those on LBC's Twitter. As soon as they flag up, you can follow it. She wouldn't follow it. She wouldn't let me on the radio to put my point across, which is anti-lockdown. There isn't going to be a second wave. And then I put to her as a parting sort of shot when she asked me, do I think there's going to be a second wave? I said, well, Cancer Research UK are saying 2.1 million people are still waiting for cancer screening and diagnosis. If you think the second wave is going to be caused by anything, it won't be coronavirus. It will be people in hospital with late stage cancers and also other diseases that the NHS neglected to even treat. GPs didn't even want to see you. But don't worry, we were out there clapping anyway, like sea lions. I tried to keep it happy today, but I've just gone off on one, haven't I, again? Let's end on this here. This is from the Office of National Statistics.gov.uk. The number of deaths registered in England and Wales the week ending 14th of August was 9,392. This is 447 deaths higher than in week 32. The rise in deaths in week 33 compared to week 32 and the five-year average was not driven by coronavirus, as deaths involving COVID-19 continue to decline. Coronavirus only counted for 152 deaths out of 9,392 in that week, accounting for 1.5% of all deaths in England and Wales. And although every death is sad, it is an inevitable part of being alive. I'll speak to the all in the next podcast. Have a great time, guys.